more of Like Effect Now. I'm Mitch Tyke. Do you remember those things? They were made out of paper and they rested on your lap when you drove through an unfamiliar place and then you tried to fold them up in just the right way when you were done? Paper roadmaps have often been left behind by their high-tech cousin, the GPS unit. Of course, the add-on GPS has been supplanted in many cases by a built-in GPS in newer cars to go along with backup cameras, integrated MP3 players, and many more options. You might, in fact, call it gizmo overload. And it's on the minds of our automotive contributor Mark Savage and Lake Effect's Dan Harmon. Savage says he thinks GPS is like a lot of electronics in cars these days. It can be useful, but...
I guess my concern is that because more and more people are getting GPS all the time, and I guess I think it's kind of funny because I think most people I know maybe take one trip a year to go someplace beyond maybe Chicago. And so how much do you really need it? So you're spending still roughly $800 to $900 probably to have a GPS system as part of a package in your car, but you have to have a screen to see the GPS system, and now your radio runs through that screen, and now everything's touchscreen. And frequently, the touchscreens don't work real well in cars, at least in my experience. And so I guess you're adding the cost of that feature. Now, you can dim them, and a lot of times there's a ways to control the different lighting levels and so forth. So like, say, maybe it's not quite as distracting at night. The only way I found to shut them off is to usually flip it onto the radio away from the GPS system when you have multiple choices. Then you've got the radio light glaring at you, but usually not quite as bad as the GPS screen. But I guess a lot of it to me comes down to in our cars these days is how lazy are we? How lazy do we want to be? Not that it's bad to have a GPS system. I think every rental car should have one. But you can buy a pretty nice Garmin and other brands for maybe $200 and take it with you when you need it. And otherwise, it's not there to bug you. It's not in your way. And I just think it's another layer of complexity, something that can go wrong and that has added cost to a car that not everyone needs. A lot of these are luxury items, but as we've experienced over time, I mean, in the 50s and 60s, power windows were a luxury item only on Cadillacs and Lincolns and things like that. And now everybody's got them. I even question how hard it is to roll up and down a window, but even so, you know, over time, some of these things do work their ways into cars and become a standard item. But it does add cost because you're adding new features and features that weren't there 5 years, 10 years, 20 years ago.
The thing that really bugs me about GPS systems is not their usefulness, because they are very useful and they're becoming more and more accurate. It's that if you want other features, for example, as some car makes, if you want to get an upgraded sound system when you get the car new, you have to get GPS. You have to get that screen. You can't just get a stereo. So it's always connected to something else, and then the costs start snowballing.
Well, correct. And that's it, is that the car makers have for years now taken the same approach as, I guess, McDonald's and others, that they're supersizing you. And so you want a package, and I think most of us in our climate, we're happy to have heated seats in a car. But many times heated seats comes with three or four other features and now cost $1,200. And all I wanted was the heated seats. And I think it's kind of funny because in our world of customization and everything can be made a certain, you know, way, cars in some ways have become less customizable, if that's a word, I guess.
Sure, it is now.
Because everything's coming to me in a package.
Are any of these items – I mean, you know, GPS certainly is useful and – are there items that you think are just silly that people are getting? I mean, push-button start. I mean, why is that a cost-saving, energy-saving, as opposed to just turning the key and sticking it in?
Yeah, I don't understand that particularly. My guess is that it's probably safer, that it's harder for a thief to figure out how to do an electronic start because you have to have this fob in your pocket sending a signal. But then again, maybe not. And to me, the fact that most of these fobs are now, you know, the size of five silver dollars packed in your pocket or something as far as the weight goes, and are like the size of a small, you know, or a moderate-sized lighter used to be. So now you got this big heavy thing in your pocket. You have to keep it there all the time. When you get in the car, it's in your pocket. It's an extra weight. And what's hard about sticking a key in a car and turning it into ignition? I don't see the difficulty there. Again, it's adding costs. And over time, like I say, these things keep adding up. One of these things that I think is not necessarily silly, but frequently doesn't work right, is a tire pressure monitor. And I know we may differ on this, but, you know, you turn on your car frequently, it will light up. Oh, you know, your left front tire is, you know, two pounds lower, and you got to go through six screens to figure out exactly what it is, which tire, and how low it is. Then you get out and you put your tire gauge on it, which, remind the listeners, a tire gauge costs about $1 to $2 to go out and check these things. And it's, you know, exactly right, or maybe it's a pound low. And you think, well, is it a pound low? Is it hot today, or is it cold today, or whatever? Frequently, they don't work right. Frequently, you're going in and having them replaced. I've had friends that tell me, oh, yeah, it's only $350 to have my tire monitor replaced. Okay, well, before that, you just checked your tires with your little gauge that cost $2, and you didn't have to worry about what your tire monitor said. Now, this is not to say that if you're a person who's not observant of your car, that maybe that tire pressure monitor is good, because at least if it lights up every other day and tells you a tire is low, maybe you're going to go check your tires every day. I'm guessing most of the time people just say, eh, they look okay to me, and they move on.
I think another feature that has – at first we may have thought it was silly or just maybe useful, but it would never catch on. I think it's either the backup camera or – even just the backup beeps, I'm not sure, the kind of the backup warning system.
Right. I think the backup camera is one of the best things that has come out. The backup camera and the blind spot warning both make sense to me, because these are safety devices. You're backing out of the driveway. Is there something behind you? If you have kids, they might have left a toy and you didn't see it when you got in the car. You know, there could be a kid on a toy behind you riding a big wheel or something like that behind you. Backing out of parking lots, it's even helpful there. You can look a little bit to the side, but now that you get your tail out a little bit, sometimes you can see whether there's a car coming. I love those kind of things. They're useful. They do add cost. And right now, most of the time, those are options. And you can decide, gee, do I want that? I'm going to pay the extra $1,200 or $1,500 or whatever for that. And do I feel like I'm going to need that? Sure. Then, okay, you've got that choice. There are some crazy things. I don't like the beeps because they're annoying. And they beep usually within like 5 feet of something. So you're pulling into a parking spot in a parking lot, and it starts beeping the second you start pulling into the thing. It's actually a distraction, because the closer you get to something, the more it's beeping. And you think, well, I know I'm getting close to that big light post in front of me. I can see it out the front of my windshield. So I think I know when I'm going to – I should know where my car is and not be bumping into things.
Although I will add that the backup cameras, you will need that screen that contains the GPS.
Correct. But then again, most of us have that now, whether we want it or not, because our radio has that. So it is a catch-22 in some regards. But again, I guess what I like the most is that you have the choice and don't add the cost. So many of the cars I saw in the paper the other day, that the average cost of a sale price of a car or vehicle this last month was $31,600 and some dollars. My guess is that most of us would like to pay 20, maybe 25, and even then we're probably stretching it. So if that's the case, I don't need all those things in my car, and I'd like to have the choice of buying a car with less items. And yes, there are some low-priced cars out there, but more and more they have some of these items on them that I'm suspecting that now, instead of that car being $15,000 that was a low-cost car, it's now $17,000 or $18,000. So it's just it's price creep caused by all the add-ons that you don't necessarily have to drive a car effectively. And one of my other pet peeves is rain-sensing wipers. And you're thinking, I think I know when it's raining and I can turn on my own wipers. It's not hard. You reach, you pull a knob, you turn a knob. It really doesn't take much effort.
Well, okay. So now I just have to ask you, can you buy a car now that does not have power windows, or a car that does not have power brakes? Can you get a powerless car, if you will?
Manual transmission? I'm sure you can't get all of those. You might get one of those on something, and probably not the brakes. I did have a Ram pickup truck that was a very basic model about a year ago, and it had crank-up windows. And ironically, I had to drive to Chicago and had to go through toll booths. And you thought, oh, man, now I got crank windows. But it wasn't that hard. But still, it was a surprise, because I haven't had a car, I bet, in at least 2 or 3 years prior to that that had anything but power windows. There may be one or two out there that still offer it, especially a real low-cost entry-level car, but most everything has the power windows and power brakes. And a lot of them have the electric power steering and everything else now too. So, and just my one other bugaboo is the crazy information systems, and not to single out one particularly bad one, but there is one particularly bad one, which is the iDrive system that's been in the BMWs for years. And they have made some improvements to it, so I'll give them some credit for realizing it wasn't working perfectly. But it's basically a big knob on your center console between your seats that serves as a mouse, so you can go through about anywhere from 10 to 1,000 layers of computer functions on your car, you know, and turning on extra features like how long before your lights go out when you turn off the car. You know, the steering power, is it going to be a comfort level or is it going to be a sport level? You know, 60 different radio channels and whether it's satellite or FM and AM and so forth. So you have a lot of things to do. And it's really – it would be great if you had a navigator with you at all times and could play with that constantly and look for the things you want. But as you and I discussed beforehand, most of us, I think, especially with radios, probably have maybe 5 stations that we listen to most of the time. And you're going to have those programmed in. And you can still do that in some of these cars, although some it's difficult to even find the stations and program them. I had one that took me, even looking at the manual, about 3 days to figure out how to find an AM or an FM channel. I was whatever it was on when I got the car. You could find the channels on that, but you couldn't switch to the other band for, you know, it wasn't intuitive, we'll put it that way. I realize, too, with all cars, and I'm driving them, test driving them usually for a week, but most cars, within a week or two, you'll probably have things programmed the way you want. But I really don't feel I should have a mechanical or electrical engineering degree just to find all the functions on my car.
And you'll remember it when you have to do it again.
Correct.
It's
like programming your VCR or whatever you want to say out there is if you don't do it every day or two, you're probably not going to remember it.
Do you think any automakers are catching on or are hearing that some customers want to get back to simplicity?
Well, I guess I've seen a number of cars that I've had lately, and I would say mostly the American cars, that have had a simpler dash and gone back to like 6 radio buttons. And yes, you can, you know, many times put 2 or 3 channels on a button on different layers. And that's not hard. So, you know, I guess I feel like that's responding to it to a certain degree. And I know some auto columnists are now counting all the buttons on their dashes and putting that in. I did that years ago, and I think I topped out at like 70 or something like that with an Alpha, which, of course, we haven't had to worry about for a number of years. Maybe we will in our near future. Mm-hmm. But, I think there is some idea from the automakers that maybe it's become too complex now, and they're going to dial it back some.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mark. I'll talk to you next month.
All right. Great. Thanks.
Mark Savage writes about cars for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he is our regular automotive contributor. He talked with Dan Harmon about the notion of gizmo overload in cars. Savage is also editor of American Snowmobiler magazine and proprietor of a website and a Facebook page. You will find links from wuwm.com/lakeeffect. One last break, and then 2 lifelong Boston Red Sox fans will try not to be overly self-indulgent on the radio. Bet you can't wait. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.